This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Bob Pearls. He's founder and executive director of New Mexico Open Primaries. He's a former state representative, and we're here to talk about open primaries. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Happy to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Good to have you on, and it's an interesting subject because it's funny, the United States electoral system, when you talk about it to people from other countries, they sort of glaze over and say, what on earth are you talking about? Not only are primaries different in every state, but some states have primaries and caucuses, and sometimes both. There are closed primaries, there are open primaries. Let's try to get a handle on all of that with you for our listeners. First of all, what are open primaries? What are closed primaries?
Well, an open primary would allow most people to vote in most elections. Sort of a simple take on open primaries is that in some states it allows independents to vote in a Republican or a Democratic primary. Other states, Democrats or Republicans can cross over to the other primary, and yet other states, the whole approach is a nonpartisan approach where people don't register in parties and they either vote in a primary party election or they vote in nonpartisan elections. But I think the easiest thing to do before the listeners glaze over on this conversation is to take a step back and realize that what we're trying to do in this movement that is addressing not just open primaries, but independent redistricting and campaign finance reform is how do we make government work? Because most people nowadays feel that government is broken. Congress doesn't work. There's gridlock in Santa Fe. There's hyperpartisanship everywhere you look. And it seems like most elected officials are more interested in winning than they are in governing. And so that's really the framework for our conversation today.
And so that is a multi-pronged approach, of course, that people are taking. And we can talk about some of those different pieces of it. What is the piece where open primaries are concerned?
Well, New Mexico Open Primaries is a nonprofit that I founded in March of 2015. And I had been a U.S. diplomat for the 5.5 years prior to that, representing America abroad. I served in Germany, Canada, West Africa, and my last overseas assignment was at the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad, Pakistan. And much of what I did was I talked about the American dream and American democracy and how we're a beacon of democracy, all of which is true. And yet I came back here after living abroad for 5 years, looking around my beloved home in New Mexico and realizing that it's broken. It just doesn't work. And throughout America, people are echoing that in this controversial presidential primary election. People on the left are supporting Bernie Sanders. People on the right are supporting Trump. And there's just a huge amount of dissatisfaction. So when I came back from being abroad, I thought to myself, what is the root cause of this dysfunction? Why are things not working? Why are we seeing this tremendous erosion of the middle class? And it all really points to a political system that's broken, but a political system that can be fixed. And so one of the big ways to fix it that several states have already paved the way for us is to change the way we elect public officials. And very closely related to that is how we continue to elect or allow incumbents to create safe districts so they continue to get reelected. And then a corollary to that is, how are these people financed? Where does the money come from? And so overall, there have been some great studies that have been released in the last 12 months that point to the fact that polarization in politics really is one of the leading causes of the loss of the middle class and the incredible economic disequilibrium that we've had in this country over the last 10 or 20 years. So instead of debating about who's going to be the best president or debating about what your environmental policy ideally would be, really the only relevant conversation right now is how do we change our political system so that the outcomes create an opportunity to create dialogue and problem solve and not just beat each other up.
Implied in that, in the statement you're making, I think, is if we change the way we elect candidates, we will also be electing actually different candidates. Is that correct?
It's only about half of that's correct. If we change the way we elect candidates, we may elect some different candidates, we may displace some incumbents, but we will create an environment that would encourage the existing incumbents to come together and work across party lines and hopefully work in spite of party labels for the betterment of New Mexico and America. For example, three states in the United States, Nebraska, Washington, and California, have not just open primaries, but they have nonpartisan open primaries with the top two vote-getters going to the general election. And there are some great studies that people can go to at openprimaries.org or our organization locally, nmopenprimaries.org, that indicates that once those systems are adopted, you end up creating an environment where you have more competitive elections because everybody gets to vote in every public election. Right now, 45% of Americans are registered independent, 25% of New Mexicans are registered independent or with minor parties, and are excluded from the first round elections, which we now call primaries. And the states where a nonpartisan approach has passed and has been in place now for 4 years in the case of California and Washington, and 50 years in the case of Nebraska, you're getting competitive elections because every election's contested versus New Mexico, where 70% of the elections actually are vacant. In the general election, there is no competition. And political scientists look at Congress and say that fewer than 10% of all congressional general elections are competitive. And so most of the decisions now are made in primaries. So when primaries exclude huge percentages of the electorate because they aren't affiliated and don't want to affiliate with the two major parties, you end up not just excluding people, but you end up with candidates who reach out to a very narrow spectrum of political beliefs, with the safe seats created through gerrymandering and districting that's controlled by partisan legislatures. You end up with safe Republican seats and safe Democratic seats. You end up with Democrats and Republicans only being concerned about being, quote, primaried, where the Republicans are concerned about getting hit further from the right, and Democrats are being concerned about being hit further from the left. And so the candidates who are successful have tracked further and further left and right over the last 20, 30 years to the point where a lot of them don't really represent most of America, which is somewhere in the middle.
Although I have to say, if you think about Hillary Clinton, she's about as centrist as you can get.
I think she's an outlier. She is centrist. She has, I think, enough baggage that she's not seen. Really, there's two issues. She's not seen as a credible candidate, I think, by a big swath of America. But you're right. She is more centrist. It's not certain that she's going to win the nomination. And when you have an environment like New Hampshire, where independents are allowed to vote, it's not always about electing the more centrist or moderate candidates. It's often about electing somebody who's going to disrupt a system that's stuck. And so it's estimated that 60% of the independents in New Hampshire are probably going to vote for Bernie Sanders. And in Iowa, it's estimated that the majority of independents split between Trump and Sanders. So it's not always a left-right issue. It's often, when you include independents and others who are excluded, it's often an anti-establishment or changing the status quo kind of vote as well. None of it's simple, and we don't guarantee outcomes. We're not advocating for open primaries, hoping it's necessarily going to be more moderate. We're advocating for open primaries because we want to create an environment where all voters can participate, which is embedded in the New Mexico Constitution, where candidates have to listen to a full spectrum of political views from the very beginning, and once elected, legislators go to Santa Fe needing and wanting to listen to a full range of beliefs and political opinion to be successful, problem solve, and actually govern, rather than simply posturing for the next election, which is a lot of what goes on in Santa Fe right now.
We're talking to Bob Pearls of New Mexico Open Primaries. Now, in the example of the states that you gave a moment ago, Nebraska, Washington, and so on, that have nonpartisan open primaries, and the top two vote-getters are the ones who get on the ballot, does that mean there's not necessarily a Democrat and a Republican?
Exactly. That's a very astute observation. Because of the gerrymandering that's gone on over the last 20, 30 years in every state, because only six states right now have independent districting commissions that remove the decisions about the shape of the districts from the politicians whom it benefits, there are safe seats. And so, let's face it, if you're a Republican living in a Democratic district under the current system, you really have no voice. But in a top two system, even if it's two Democrats in a heavily Democratic district, chances are one of the Democrats is going to be a traditional Democrat seeking support from the traditional base of labor union support, trial lawyer support, environmental support. And the other candidate is probably going to end up being a more moderate candidate wanting to run a campaign, reaching out not just to Democrats, but to independents, libertarians, Greens, and moderate Republicans. And what we're finding in Washington, California, and Nebraska is that every election cycle, those kinds of coalitions are being successful and electing candidates who want to have a dialogue. You know, in the old days, in the 90s, I represented what's called a swing district. There are hardly any swing districts left. A swing district means that you could either elect a Democrat or a Republican from the district because it's about 50-50 both ways. And the way I behaved in the legislature was very different than the way most of the legislators behaved who came from a safe Democratic or a safe Republican seat. I listened to everybody. Those legislators tended to listen to their base and respond really only to what the base, which tended to be further left and further right, wanted. And so in the end, I was able to craft, and other legislators who represented swing districts were able to compromise, problem solve, and feel like we were really representing our districts. Under some of these reforms, every legislator would feel that way, and every legislator would be free to vote his conscience, to represent everybody in the district, and not focus just on that narrow band that they believe will turn out in a very limited Democratic or Republican closed primary.
Is open primaries, New Mexico open primaries, working specifically and directly on the issue of redistricting?
It's one of our top three priorities. If you go to our website, open primaries is number one, redistricting is number two, and reducing the barriers to independents getting on the ballot as a candidate is number three.
And where are we with the possibility of doing redistricting a new way right now?
Well, Representative Carl Trujillo introduced a bill for an independent redistricting commission, and the last I heard, it passed its first committee, just like the open primaries bill that we helped draft. Our prime sponsors are Representative Mo Maestas from the Albuquerque area is our prime sponsor, and the other prime sponsor is Representative Stephanie Garcia Richard from the Los Alamos area. And then Representative Carl Trujillo has been working very closely with Common Cause to run the independent redistricting bill, which has made it through its first committee as well, the same committee we made our open primaries made through.
Now, if you were to have a fair kind of redistricting process and it were made up of citizens and it was not a primarily partisan or legislator-driven process, how would it work? Is the goal to have districts be more balanced between Democrats, Republicans, independents, or is the goal to have it be sort of more geographically sound? I mean, what would be the mandate for an independent redistricting commission?
Well, the goal is to have organic communities and logical communities connected. Right now, the way a lot of districts are is they look like the shape of South American countries. They look like Chile, or they look like an animal, you know, just sort of gripping and sticking into all different parts of New Mexico, going up and over the Sandias when, you know, Moriarty might not have a whole lot in common with Bernalillo, for example, or the Rio communities are hooked into little his communities on the other side of the Manzanos. This happens constantly where there's no logical connection, and it's done explicitly for political reasons. So the idea is to try to remove the decision-making from politicians who have a conflict of interest and a vested interest in keeping districts that they can be reelected in and moving it to a system that makes logical sense to an impartial outsider. Somebody would look at a district and say, oh yeah, this makes sense that Bernalillo and Corrales are connected to the North Valley of Albuquerque, you know, versus another example that I gave earlier.
We're talking about trying to pass a bill, trying to get legislators to pass a bill, which would basically not give legislators as much safety in getting reelected. What are the chances of that?
Well, you know, it's a challenge. But I think if ever there was a year when revolution is fomenting, it's this year. And so the Ethics Commission is moving further than it's ever moved. I think the Independent Redistricting Bill will move further than it's ever moved. Actually, a true open primaries bill that we've introduced with the help of Representative Maestas and Garcia Richard has made it further than anybody expected through one committee. So these bills may not be successful this year, but it's all an education process. We need to educate the voters. We need to educate the legislators. Voters will start asking the legislators in this election year how they feel about these kinds of process issues. You know, people think that the only thing that they can ask are traditional issues. How do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about gay rights? How do you feel about education? But really, the more they learn about these issues, the more voters realize that they have to ask process questions. They have to ask, do you support ethics, an independent ethics commission? Do you support lobbyist registration? Do you support open primaries? Do you support independent redistricting? Why is it so hard for independent and minor party candidates to run, much less get elected in New Mexico? Because it's these systemic reforms that will open up the ability to solve all these other problems that desperately need solving in New Mexico.
I think one of the things that I see as good that can come out of that is if we are no longer tied to what you call, you know, extremes of left and right, we may have the opportunity to look at the fact that the terms left and right are less and less meaningful as time goes by. When you think about what are the important issues to New Mexicans, water, air, health care, education, those aren't left and right, and what do left and right even mean in those cases? And I think it's been time for quite a while to see that so many people are voting against their own interests because they've been tied to those labels, and those labels don't mean the same things that they did even 25 years ago.
Yes, I think your comments are very perceptive. I think there's proof that people are realizing this because the United States has gone from about an 8% independent registration 30 years ago to a 45% independent registration now. And I think if we did some polling in New Mexico, you'd find that even though we're only at 25% independent registration, if people could vote in primaries, they probably, as independents, they probably would not be registering with the Democratic and the Republican parties in the same numbers. People want to participate. They don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be pigeonholed.
When you were a legislator, or now, and when you talk to people who are independent voters, how do they talk to you? How do they present what they're interested in? People who are neither Democrats nor Republicans.
Well, I'm a registered independent now, and I have been for almost a year, because I want to stand in solidarity with all those disaffected independents. And most of the independents in my organization and whom I talk to and who serve on our volunteer board of directors are so frustrated and alienated from the two-party system that they could just scream. It doesn't represent them. It's dysfunctional. It doesn't solve problems. And so most independents I talk to, and frankly, most Republican and Democrats I talk to, are fed up with the labels. There are only a few, maybe 10% of the electorate on the left and 10% of the electorate on the right, who really truly embrace the partisan labels and are really truly sort of typically liberal on the left side, typically conservative on the right side. But, you know, the people, even with Republican label, some are uncomfortable with the social conservatism, some are uncomfortable with the immigration discussion, some are uncomfortable with the interventionalist foreign policies on the far right. And on the left, people who are registered Democrats, some are very uncomfortable with the talk of sort of socialism and social democracy, and uncomfortable with growing government to the extent that some on the far left are talking about. Some are uncomfortable with the tax burden that might mean. So you end up with independents mostly just sort of feeling like, hey, you know, if we didn't have these labels, just like in a neighborhood, we could pull the neighborhood together, solve the skunk problem, solve the lack of paved streets, you know, just common sense, build a coalition and solve the problems and remove these barriers that these labels provide politicians and even, you know, provide some of the electorate.
If we were to succeed in having redistricting, in having campaign finance reform, in having open primaries that included people of every party and no party at all, do you see this potentially leading to a multi-party system where we did actually have candidates, not just voters, but candidates who represented these disenfranchised voters?
I think you'd have a lot of candidates. I don't think you'd have a lot of parties. I think that, you know, multi-party systems exist in Europe largely because it's a parliamentary system and the party structure is actually very strong in Europe. Having lived in Germany for 2 years, I studied it and saw it. I think what we would end up with is more voter engagement through more competitive elections, a wider range of candidates running and being successful because they don't have to pander to the usual moneyed interests and the usual far-left, far-right interests. I think you'd end up with a much more interesting, diverse group of legislators and congressmen and women that are a better representation of New Mexico and America. You know, and open primaries is maybe a third to a half of the issue. Independent redistricting is maybe, you know, 25 to 35% of the issue. You know, the finance piece is a piece of the issue. I think what people need to realize is that we're not going to solve the problem in one fell swoop, but that doesn't mean that you should check out. It means you got to support groups like New Mexico Open Primaries and Common Cause and League of Women Voters and any other group that's advocating for systemic structural reform, because that's what's going to make the difference.
Bob Pearls is founder and executive director of New Mexico Open Primaries. Now, this is part of a national organization that is also working for the same goals?
Well, only informally. We're our own 501c3, but there is a national group called Open Primaries, and there's a national group called independentvoting.org, both of which we're loosely affiliated with. I admire their leaders, but the two organizations are slightly different. One's focused on empowering independents, The other is focused on the actual open primary reforms that are taking place in all 50 states. So we're part of a national movement, but we're trying to act locally to make changes to pull New Mexico out of the doldrums.
For more information, people can go to nmopenprimaries.org. Bob Pearls, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.